Again, 3 John, Pew Bible, page 1026. The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that all may go well with you, and that you may be in good health, as it goes well with your soul. For I rejoiced greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Beloved, it is a faithful thing to do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their journey in a manner worthy of God, for they have gone out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support people like these, that we may be fellow workers of the truth. I have written something to the church, but Diotrephes, who liked to put himself first, does not acknowledge our authority. So if I come, I will bring up what he is doing, talking wicked nonsense against us. And not content with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers, and also stops those who want to, and puts them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate evil, but imitate good. Whoever does evil is from God. Whoever does good is from God. Whoever does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone, and from the truth itself. We also add our testimony, and you know that our testimony is true. I had much to write to you, but I would rather not write with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon, and we will talk face to face. Peace be to you. The friends greet you. Greet the friends, each by name.
So we have a couple weeks where Dave has been off on vacation on a much-needed rest, and thankfully we have men that can fill the pulpit within our church. We thank you so much for Jim preaching last week, and course, today I get to preach to you. So if you're new, this isn't the regular preaching. Dave will be back next week and getting back into the book of Genesis. But we're here to talk about 3 John. And the 3 John is the shortest letter in the New Testament. It's actually a letter to a friend, not a church. 1 and 2 John, as you know, are letters to churches. But this is a personal letter. This letter is where John wants to get a hold of his buddy Gaius. John personally greets him, and he does a couple things. He encourages him to continue to be great at hospitality. He warns him of someone who refuses hospitality, and he wants to inform him of someone who needs to receive hospitality. John is about 70 years old now. He's one of the last living apostles, and he's got every right to refer to himself as an apostle, but he refers himself as an elder. Now, he just might be calling himself an old guy because that's what he is now, and that's what this word means, but primarily he wants to promote that he's not some super Christian, but he's just one of the other elders that he and the apostles have set up as leadership of the church. If you read 1 and 2 John, you see a theme of love running through those books. It's the message from the beginning, from 1 John. And also John shows us that love assures us that we've passed from life to death. If you keep reading in 1 and 2 John, he continues to teach us what love is and what it isn't. And in that context of love, he talks to us about hospitality here in the third book of John. And he's heard some things about this unnamed church where Gaius attends. Maybe he doesn't attend there. We'll see later. I have a suspicion he doesn't attend there now, and we'll find out later. But Gaius is the recipient of this letter. I don't think Gaius is a church hopper or a person who just fails to avail himself to the hospitality and the fellowship of believers. No, he's a prominent servant of the church. I've read in some places that he was one of the guys that was trusted to carry and deliver the money in Paul's first missionary trip. And so if you look up, if you see, read about Gaius here, there's actually 3 Gaiuses in the Bible. One of them housed Paul when he wrote the book of Romans. Another one had many people in his house. And this one here, this Gaius, we talk about, he's a great person for hospitality as well. Now this name Gaius, it's a common name. Everybody here's got names that are common. And I think John wrote this, and I think God is using this guy's name just to tell us he's just a common guy. Gaius is a guy who is a very common name for the people of that time. But what's important is Gaius is seen as knowing the truth, walking in the truth, and loving the brethren. He also does this by showing hospitality to strangers to promote the gospel. Speaking of guys, there's this person I know. I call him the mayor of all Christians. His name is Lou Bracadora. He lives in New Jersey, and it seems like he knows virtually every Christian man in person in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And see, we got to know him through going to Ocean City Bible Conference, and our family finally attended his house this year, and we got a chance to meet up with him, and we had all six of our family members in his bachelor pad, so that was kind of fun. But he introduced to me what seemed like at least 100 different men that this guy knew. And it was not just nonchalant friendships. He knew these guys deeply. It wasn't someone that we didn't come across that he already had known. Now, of course, you know, we had talks about the Bible, and we had a good time of fellowship, but the biggest impression I took from my trip and my visit with him was the tangible love I felt from this guy. I felt as he brought people to me that seemed unknown at first, he made them known so that I knew them as well. He made his friends my friends. He reminds me of this guy, Gaius. He's not a rich guy, but he fed us. He gave us a home to stay at for a while, and he even splurged to, you know, have our kids attend Six Flags amusement park, which was cool. I loved it. It seemed like my family was his best friend. But as I tell you now, sadly, I think we weren't his only best friend. You see, everybody is this guy's best friend. I'm kind of, jealous now because thinking we're the family he likes the best, but no, everybody is this guy's best friend. I would love to introduce you to this guy. He's a pretty cool dude. Well, back to this letter. John writes this letter intending to remind Gaius to stay hospitable. That's basically it. Stay hospitable. Remember to be hospitable. He's to embrace traveling missionaries and preachers of the truth for the sake of the gospel. Not be intimidated by a man who loves preeminence, a man who puts others out for the sake of his own glory. The primary purpose for this letter was for John to tell Gaius to accompany a man by the name of Demetrius, who is coming to visit that area. Now, the guy is standing in front of him. He's the one that's handing him the letter. That's usually how that works. John wrote the letter, introduced him through the letter, to this guy Demetrius, and Demetrius is there to give Gaius this letter. A friendship has been made, and John has done that through this letter. It's pretty cool. But with that in mind, let's dig in. I've heard some of you guys been rustling with these papers that are in front of you, and that's an insert in your bulletin. So if you want to take notes, now's where you can start filling in some of them blanks. If you don't want to listen or you get bored, you can doodle on the front. For some of you adults, you turn the page over and you can color. For some of you with OCD, the next couple of fill in the blanks I've switched, so B and C I've switched for you, okay? But some of you others, watch out, I got a good object lesson, so it'll keep your attention. I got three main points to pull from this. So here's your three words you can fill in. Remembering hospitality, refusing hospitality, and receiving hospitality. Remembering, refusing, receiving. Here's the first one. Remembering hospitality. Hospitality conveys an idea of getting up under something, as to lift it up. That's a good picture of hospitality. We welcome people into our homes, our apartments, our dorm rooms, all for the purpose of taking a load off of others. We become their servant. Hospitality, contrary to popular belief, doesn't require a fancy home or fine china or some gourmet meal. It simply calls for us to be willing to welcome and support those that need a break, to bear their burdens, and if you know the opportunity comes, to do good to everyone, especially those in the household of God. There are churches, though, that are very poor at hospitality. I've heard of some people attending churches for years without anyone attempting to invite them into their home for a visit, a meal, or even a snack. Even our own church, from time to time, fails at this. Once I had a conversation a few years back with someone who left our church to go look at other churches for various reasons, and he told me in the final analysis that no one other than the elders had called them to ask where he was. And now there are many reasons for that, and that's okay, we don't need to get into that, but the thing is true, no one had called him. Now I'm sure if you ask pastors and preachers of other churches, they'll also have people who have complained of poor hospitality. For the most part, though, I really think our church and other churches I've attended in this area actually do practice hospitality in a good way. Tragically, though, this is why I need to remind us, many Christians neglect the ministry of hospitality. And so that's why we are to be reminded. That's why John reminds Gaius, be hospitable. John here starts out in verse 1, to the beloved. He says it actually four times in this passage, and it's a term for a good buddy, a friend. But more importantly, though, it is someone who is loved by God, someone who's saved, someone who can now love because God's love is in them. Not a haughty love, but a humble servant love. Because Gaius is beloved, he can love others. Just like Zacchaeus in Luke 19, who after his encounter with Jesus and being born again, he wanted to show his love, and he invited Jesus and all of his guests into his house to show love. Being beloved is a prerequisite for biblical hospitality. Hospitality should become second nature to you as you become rooted, as you become a brother or sister in the Lord. Remember, our brotherhood is rooted in our oneness with Christ. When we've been united with Christ, we can begin to show hospitality the way God intended it. And it is a mark of a true Christian. We know from this letter, John had a special connection. John, no doubt, presented the gospel to Gaius and discipled him. Verse 4 says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. It's a term used for disciples. Other places in the Bible, the Apostle Paul refers to himself as a father to Timothy. And I think we can relate to John here that, you know, there's a joy of knowing that our children and other people that we've discipled are walking in the truth. By the way, this word, whom I love, is the only place in the Bible where you'll find one person saying, I love you, to another. And so after the sermon, hopefully some of you guys can say, I love you to someone, right? I love you in Christ, or in the truth. John also asks Gaius about his health. We've heard here that in this little letter about his spiritual well-being because of the reports he's heard. But he makes sure that Gaius's body is keeping up with his soul. John's not neglecting one or the other, but he's concerned about the whole person. There was a heresy at the time that despised or separated the body and the soul, and it despised the physical body. And so, you know, today for us, you know, we need to not, you know, get into this prosperity, wealth gospel. And so, which also has an unhealthy and sinful way of connecting the two. Whereas, you know, at this time, they were separating the two. And today we hear people of connecting them saying, you know, if you're sick or you're not doing well, wealthy, that you have some sin in you. You know, and there's many guys that you can probably think of now that you hear on the radio that preach this nonsense of prosperity. But I think most of us Christians can fall into neglect of either body or soul, thinking that one is not related to the other or relating them too closely. But that's where hospitality comes into play. To be like Christ, we must develop an interest in the whole person. Through hospitality, as we lovingly care for their immediate needs, we gain an opportunity to share with them their ultimate need. And so biblical hospitality is care for body and soul. Back to the theme of love. As you remember when John wrote the gospel, and it said in John 13:34, by this all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. I ask you now, do you have love for one another? I'm sure you do. I know most of you guys. But let me ask you, why do you love? Is it because you have to? Or that you might get something in return? Do you open your homes to strangers like Gaius did? Who might you have in your home that you might have for a visit and to encourage them? Back years ago, Stacy and I, we attended a Bible training out in Lafayette. And it was in Indiana, and so we had three kids at the time, and so we put our kids in homes back here, and we were off 10 hours away to receive this training. Now, being on a tight budget with these types of kids and one income, we opted to stay with the church family. And so it was a great option. It was cheaper for us to stay there. And so all we knew about them was that they were a church family, and they were professing to know the Lord and ready to open their homes. Great. Well, when we got there, we were welcomed by a friendly sister in the Lord who refused to let us stay anywhere but in her master bedroom with our own private bathroom. And I understand she said, you know, it was easier for her to do things in the house, to have us away from her, but I understand that she was really sacrificing for us so that we could be refreshed and away and to relax as we got back each night. But what was good about that was each morning she would have some casserole or breakfast, something, coffee, muffins. And then when we got back from the conference, she'd talk to us and get to know us and ask us what we learned. It was great. And this went on for a whole week. I was so overwhelmed by this. I had never received hospitality from anyone like this. I noticed towards the end of the week how great her sacrifice was. She actually had roomed with her daughter in the next room, and there wasn't enough beds, and so she was actually sleeping on the ground. And I didn't say anything because I was kind of felt embarrassed after that. But she did this on purpose. She wanted to. She wanted to love us. She wanted to make sure that we were there to receive hospitality. But the biggest thing was we were prompted with eagerness to learn all that we could, because I knew that this person was sacrificing for us, so that we can learn and grow. And we've become her friends now. We've been out there we were out there several years after that, and we know her as a friend in the Lord. I have a biological brother and sister that I know less than I know her. It was because of her love towards us, and we've grown in the Lord. I've learned hospitality, and I've learned what it was tangibly by this woman. And we want to spread the gospel, and God used Rhonda Kerr to show us love through the ministry of hospitality. Now, I just said this because this was a great way, and I know none of us can do this as great as I've received it from this person, but as an example of hospitality. One of the key factors that explains the early expansion of the church was the display of the love among the first Christians. The same holds true today. Christianity spreads when we show love by laying down our lives for the brethren. Hebrews tells us to let love, love the brother and let it continue. And then later he tells us to not neglect hospitality in Hebrews 13. And so through the ministry of hospitality, we provide friendship, acceptance, fellowship, refreshment, and comfort and love in one of the richest and deepest ways possible for humans to understand. A cold, unfriendly church contradicts the gospel. And yet, when you ask people, unfriendliness is one of the most common criticisms people have about local churches. It doesn't take people long to figure out there's a churchy kind of love that ends at the front door. Brotherly love, however, is an intimate relationship where we care for one another, where we have knowledge of one another, where we belong to each other and we share life together, inviting individuals into your home. We hardly know each other until we get into each other's homes or eat together and talk to one another across the home, across the table. We definitely don't know each other until you actually play a game called Ticket to Ride. Speaking of which, Dave, when he was candidating to be a pastor here at the church, I had a bright idea of providing him with a lengthy, drawn-out spreadsheet. And it was carefully planned out for a long week for Dave and Jamie, that they would go into the homes of most of the people here, and you remember having him over there. But at each home, there was a group of members, and so that he would virtually have a meal with every member of the church. In my overzealousness, it might have gotten away because I think I wore poor Dave and Jamie out. But the spirit was in hospitality. I knew that if people got to know Dave, if they shared a meal with him, they would vote for him as being a pastor because he was so young and inexperienced. Now, he's still here, so I guess it worked out. But it's hospitality where we get to know people. And so if you're wondering what you can do for the Lord, or if you want to know how to use your spiritual gifts, your home is the ideal place in which to start. If you already do this, I commend you. I commend you to do this, and I ask you to keep doing it, just like John asks Gaius. Be known as faithfully showing hospitality, not only to the brothers, but to strangers as well. No doubt they might become friends in the Lord. Many people need the ministry of hospitality, and your home is the best tool to have to show Christian love and to enhance Christian community. And so even though our church is known for being friendly, I ask each and every one of you, think of ways where you can open up your home. Stacy told me that the home is the lighthouse for the gospel. And she's right. Verse 7 and 8 says that we ought to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together for the truth. The home is the hub for evangelism and teaching. Each day from house to house, Paul preached and taught Jesus as Lord in Acts 5. Acts 10, remember Cornelius? There was a guy by the name of Cornelius and his family. They were one of the first Gentiles to be saved. Now, I'm not telling you to start a home church, but it wasn't at church where this guy was saved and received the message of salvation. Peter went to his home and preached. And if you want to evangelize, try opening up your home. Most of us don't use our homes the way we should to reach our neighbors and our friends. And I know I fail at this myself. It is through hospitality in our homes where we can meet our neighbors and be a lighthouse to dark neighborhoods. Sharing our home is one of the most memorable things that we can do. It conveys the message of God's love, of Christ's love. When we think of hospitality, most of us think of entertaining friends, right? And we've done this, especially over this last weekend. And that's good, and we should be doing that. But Christ commands us to extend our circle to unrelated and needy people. Luke 14, don't go there now, but I'll just reference it for you. When he says, when you give a lunch, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or your rich neighbors, lest they invite you in return and give repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, and the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since they do not have means to repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Sometimes it's self-glorifying to impress others with your home or your entertainment skills. In contrast, Christians are to display hospitality in a humble, sacrificial service. A humble, sacrificial service. We can think, unless I can impress them, or there's no use trying because I can't compete with others. I remember when Nate Rubel came here to preach, when we do the pastor swaps. He came to our house. We invited him over, but he had sandwiches and soup on paper plates and paper bowls. It wasn't there to impress him. We weren't there to invite him over for a great meal, but for great fellowship. Now, Stacy does make really good soup, but it wasn't about, you know, our presentation. We have four kids. We can't impress them. We just want to invite them over for great fellowship. And so if you want to read about others in the Bible who show hospitality, well, think of this. You got Simon the Tanner. He entertained apostles, and later he entertained angels. And it was in Acts 9 and Hebrews 13. Remember Lydia? She was eager to have Paul and his whole missionary crew over to her house. Philemon, he had a loving spirit, and he opened up his house regularly to people. And of course, we're talking about, you know, Gaius here, but there was three other Gaiuses that opened their home to people. The way we show hospitality is important. There's a way we need to send them on their way in a manner worthy of the Lord. In verse 6 it says, it refers to making adequate provision for them for the next step on the journey. Back then they didn't have GPS or Holiday Inn, right? You actually went with them and guided them to the next town, to the next person's house that you were to send them to. That's how we send them in a manner worthy of the Lord. Now, we don't have to worry about that these days, but our kids profit from us inviting God's people into our homes. They will know the reality of what we believe by what they see in the home. If you have people over, if you are showing hospitality, your kids learn that. And the Bible commends us to do that. The Bible commends us to practice hospitality, to be hospitable to one another without complaint, to not neglect to show hospitality. An overseer must be hospitable. And even widows, if they were to be on a list, they were to show hospitality to strangers. And so in this text, hospitality is not just to show it to Christian tourists like Stacy and I were. It's to those who begin their journey for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles. These people were preachers and missionaries. They didn't ask for any donations from non-Christians. It's very different from the vagrants who peddled religion for money. And again, I'm sure you can think of people now on radio that you hear that they just preach to get money. But giving is an act of worship. And that's why we don't ask for fundraisers for ministries here at the church, because God provides. True preachers don't preach for money. They preach to express their love for God. And if you want to realize this, you know, our pastor, he's rescinded raises for the past several years because of this. But I'm glad that our church has given him raises, because it is up to us, it is up to our church to take care of pastors and preachers and missionaries. And I understand we get to do this, and it's great to do it, but there's something important. We get to be fellow co-workers for the gospel when we support our preachers. and missionaries. And I understand not everybody should be a missionary, but we get to be a vital role in their missionaries and their ministries when we give to them. And we can pray for them. We can send money, send cards. It's great to encourage these people that preach the name. And so showing hospitality is a true mark of a Christian. It's amazing how many excuses I give that I can explain why I don't want to show hospitality. But if I'm commanded to show hospitality, I can't do that if my front door is closed. Hospitality is supposed to be a beautiful expression of a transformed life. And to be truthful, I'm not always eager to pursue hospitality. I don't always look for ways to pursue it. And sometimes it does only happen during times of holidays. But does it have to? Do you understand the important role of hospitality? It's in the context of love and in the context of sharing the gospel. I know I have a lot to learn in practice of this, and I'm sure you do too. But at heart, we have to realize that we're all selfish. And selfishness is the greatest enemy to hospitality. Selfishness is the greatest enemy to hospitality. We are greedy, and we don't want to share our food and our home or our money. We're afraid our money will get wasted and our property damaged. I remember the first time we started having a small group at our house. And, you know, I was a loser. I still am, but I was a really big loser back then because, you know, I was yelling out, you know, don't drink coffee in the new living room. You know, take your shoes off. Don't ruin my stuff, right? All while I'm trying to clean up after these, you know, stinking Christians that were in my house. But I was more worried about the things than these dirty, rotten Christians that were in my home for a Bible study. Now, thankfully, I've grown a little bit with that. But I need to enjoy people rather than my stuff. I need to let Christians wreck my house and be okay with it. I need to show hospitality without complaint, to be willing and cheerfully to accept an inconvenience like the cheerful giver. You know, and despite the joy of Christian hospitality, it is also easy to neglect in times of spiritual stress or apathy. Don't think that's an excuse, though. Neglect in hospitality is a sure sign of slacking in love. It might be costly and intrusive, but that's what a Christian brother needs, and that's what's demanded of brotherly love. We were at a seminar for Together for the Gospel, and they said that when there's love issues in the home, then you will lack in hospitality. Now, that was in a context of marriage, but it is in a context of just hospitality. Your hospitality will lack. And so I ask you, do you love God? Do you love others? Do you love them enough to show hospitality? And even more than that, like this letter, do you show hospitality enough that others will testify to that? Like these brothers that went to Gaius and they're actually telling John about his hospitality? And just so you know, love is not just loving others and opening your home for parties. I used to do this quite a bit when I was an unbeliever. I would have all kinds of parties at my house. But love is God loving you, even when you're running from him. Love is a transformed life. It's one that values truth and compassion for others, especially those that minister for the gospel. You can't be indifferent to your brothers and sisters and think that you're living in light of the gospel just because you have people over for the Super Bowl. It just ain't happening. There's supposed to be a biblical purpose, and that is to promote Christ by loving others in a tangible way. You promote Christ by loving others in a tangible way. Point number two, and these next ones are short. Refusing others. So if Gaius was an example of showing hospitality, Diotrephes is the example of refusing hospitality. This guy's arrogant. He's a dictator. He wants to be first. And John says he loves the preeminence, or he loves to be first in verse 9. There's always people who love preeminence. Proverbs 16:28 says, "The perverse man spreads strife and slander, and they separate intimate friends." Whether it's gossip or slander or backbiting, the purpose is to turn other people against the victim. And so his perversity is aimed at harming other people. So if my friend Lou from New Jersey was making his friends my friends, a guy by the name of Diotrephes, or a person like him, he would be making his enemies my enemies. And before long, I would be his enemy as well if I got in the way. And the Bible has many examples about these bad guys. We've learned a couple weeks ago about this guy by the name of Lamech. He was a hard sinner, and he flaunted his sin against God. You know, even to say that, you know, if God can take care of Cain sevenfold, I'll take care of myself 77-fold. I mean, who thinks of things like this, right? I think he was the first mob boss in the Bible, this Lamech. We have, remember Haman in the book of Esther? You know, he thought he was so big, he wasn't even a king, and he's making people bow down before him. And remember, a person by the name of Mordecai, he wouldn't do that. And so that infuriated Haman, so much so that he wanted to hang Mordecai. The funny thing is, the sad thing is, Haman got hanged by the very gallows he made for Mordecai. Nebuchadnezzar, right? God made him into a raving lunatic because he thought he was great. King Herod, in the New Testament, he was turned into and eaten by worms when he tried to make a national holiday for himself. And then the first zombies, right? The Pharisees and Sadducees, right? The dead men walking, right? Sepulchers and white bones. Well, yeah, they're the first zombies. And so, you know, God does that. He says, if you're a proud people, you're actually white sepulchers, dead men walking. And even John, when he was younger, years and years ago, he wanted to sit at the right hand of Jesus. Thankfully, though, God worked in his heart and softened it. And he does that to you and me. Diotrephes wanted preeminence. Colossians 1:18 says there is only one person that has preeminence, and that's Christ alone. And so Diotrephes, a Diotrephes-type person, is actually competing with Christ. Do you believe it? I mean, he does this by rejecting those that serve Christ. And so a Diotrephes would be rejecting those that serve Christ. They refuse the brothers. And so if Gaius is known for knowing truth, for walking in the truth, for loving the brethren, and entertaining strangers, then Diotrephes is seen as loving himself and gossiping with others and about others and refusing to allow anyone to come in who might be shown love. He wants the love all for himself. And you won't have to worry about arguing with doctrinal issues with this guy. He just cares about himself. I can just imagine John writing this letter, and Diotrephes finds it and throws it out, some type of a disciplinary letter. I can think of this because myself, when I was younger, I received report cards from time to time, and not all of them were great. And so one of them, I remember, I hid it for at least a week straight. Well, our school mailed a copy, so my parents knew about it. Anyways, kind of like what John's doing with Gaius, right? He's writing another letter to take care of business. And I'm thankful that my parents received it. But see, I didn't want any opinion of any teacher of me. I was doing just great on my own. I did not want to have anyone think ill of me. And so, thankfully, my parents didn't let my anger or my arrogance linger. They presented me the report card and took care of business. But they showed me my sin and my vulnerability. And so we as parents, we can't just always, just want our kids to shine. We need to show them that they're sinners. We need a Savior. We don't need to be like Diotrephes. He refuses the brothers in verse 10. and they reject anything that gets in their way. Even the most faithful person will be gotten rid of. You know, the more influential you are, the more you are a threat. This is John here. He's the last remaining apostle, and he rejects even his authority, right? Verse 9, he says he doesn't even acknowledge our authority. And this word refuses is not just a one-time thing. It's an ongoing meaning to it. So it's a habit. He refuses authority. And so do you know anyone like this? Do you know anyone that just refuses authority all the time? He's not loving. He's not compassionate. And he surely doesn't have the mind of Christ. He doesn't gain trust the long, slow, hard way of exposing yourself to other people so that they get to know you. No, this guy, he just exposes the bad things about other people and removes the trust from everyone else. So he's the last one standing. He tries to be king of the hill. The issue is this guy is a prime candidate for discipline. And John knows it. That's why, you know, he says that this guy's got a lot of power. But the problem is the church, they were afraid at this time. He calls him out. He's prepared to publicly expose this guy. And, you know, this Diotrephes, he's got leadership of the whole church. John knew from a personal experience that a Diotrephes-type person is no good for kingdom work. Remember John, he wanted to be first. He wanted to sit next to Jesus. I really assume that, you know, John repented of his sin of arrogance. And I'm sure you or I, when we fall into times of arrogance, we can repent and learn to be loving and kind and humble. Leadership is not about honor. It's not about privilege. It's about humility and responsibility. Leadership means to condescend to serve. And so anyone who craves that position of authority, they're interested in titles or clout, interested in being in the limelight, they're not fit for God's work. They're not fit to lead God's people. So I ask you, test your own motives. Would I still do this, whatever ministry you're involved in, would you still do this if no one praised you? If no one gave you recognition? Or if someone else's desires were chosen over yours, would you still do the work that you are called to do? Well, this Diotrephes, we hear and see in verse 10 that his primary way of knocking people down is by wicked nonsense. Those that refuse hospitality are ones that totally usually gossip. Now, the prime way these people gain authority is through gossip. And so here's, you know, one real quick object lesson. So you see that bubble right there? That's what it is. That's what gossip is. It's empty air. And so you look at it, but through inspection of it, it just breaks apart. And that's what a gossip is. It's something big and shiny, something that, you know, at first it just looks like it might be true about this person, but it's emptiness. And that's what Diotrephes does. He says things about others, wicked nonsense. Are you trained in Scripture to be able to stand up against these people? What about you? Are you prone to gossip? Are you willing to hear rebuke if someone calls you out? And remember, gossips don't waste time with small words. They use big words. Your name is soiled. And they're good at it because they practice it. And just to remind you, the word wicked here, it's the same word used of the devil back in 1 John 5:18. Wicked nonsense. And I think this wickedness got out of hand. And so, you know, this guy, Diotrephes, he puts him out. And I think Gaius was put out of the church. I can't prove it. It doesn't actually say it. But I can just imagine it. Gaius was here at the church, and this other guy, Diotrephes, he's arrogant and power hungry. And the more he got, the more he wants. And I think he just got rid of Gaius. That's just my opinion. But, you know, you can think of what you want, but you can see it happening. You can see people that just gain power and try to remove others. The most important thing, though, is refrain from gossiping. Refrain from talking ill of other people. Try to display the gospel through hospitality. Another way to say it is, don't be gossip tellers, but show hospitality. Right? If you want to change the name, right, show hospitality. That would be the name of the sermon, hospitality. John tells us that, he says to Gaius, the fact that there's a Diotrephes in a church, you need to do what's right. He says, don't imitate evil, imitate good. And there's a lot of pressure to give up, and it might be costly, but don't give up. Keep showing hospitality. Because he says, those that don't love don't know God, because God is love. If Gaius is an example of hospitality, Diotrephes is an example of refusing it, well, this guy Demetrius, he's an example of those that must receive it. And so receiving hospitality, bear with me, it's just a couple paragraphs. Here's the last two fill-in-the-blanks. We as believers have received God's hospitality through his love. We are his friend now. He has shown us his love by sending us his son, who was sacrificed for our transgressions. Before we were saved, all we could do was evil. Thinking that it was good, it was evil. But now, because of the great love that God has showed for us, now we can do good. Now we can show hospitality in a way that God intended it. We can love brothers the way God intends it. And it is through sacrificial, servant-hearted service to others so that the gospel is preached. Opening our homes to strangers and brothers and sisters for the gospel. We as believers must show hospitality to others, especially those that bring the good news. And so who is it that you can be hospitable to? Not someone that can repay you, but I mean, who can you show loving kindness that would be blown away by your showing of love? If you are of God, you will do good. If you are not, you'll be doing evil. And so if you're already hospitable, it's a sure sign that you're a Christian, one who loves God and loves other people. And that's what John is all about, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, just test to see, to let you know and to assure you that you are a Christian. But test your motive. Are you doing these things? What motive is it for? Just to be friends? Or is it for God and for the gospel? To do good, to show hospitality in the way God intends, is evidence of a transformed life. Your witness will be threefold. Just like Demetrius was in verse 12. It'll be the truth itself. Other people will see your good deeds. And leaders around you, leaders of the church, will take note of it. So are you marked by arrogance or are you marked by love? Proverbs tells us that a good name is more desirable to be than gold or silver. What do people think about you? And so here's a couple of applications, three of them. Lovingly extend hospitality to others when you can. This will make you a partner in the ministry. Be like Gaius, right? Lovingly extend hospitality. Number two, humbly use your gifts to serve God, not yourself. Be careful not to misuse your position of authority. Don't be like Diotrephes. Number three, look for ways to encourage faithful Christians. Determined to be known as a faithful servant of Christ, like Demetrius. And so if you haven't shown hospitality, do it. And if you do, continue in it, because it is a great thing. You have no idea the impact. Rhonda Kerr had no idea the impact that she had on Stacy and I. If you show hospitality in the way God intends, you have no idea the impact you have on other people's lives. You get to be part of the proclamation of the gospel. And it's through hospitality. The sad truth, it usually suffers when God is not preeminent in your life or in your home. And it's not just afternoons with your friends. It's someone you haven't had in your home. It is someone that you can build up to be a fellow worker of the truth. And so as the worship team comes up, I'll just read this last paragraph. The fact that we know God should make us compelled to get to know other brothers and sisters in the Lord, to develop true friendships. It takes sacrifice and time and resources. You have to know God, and you need to get to know the brothers. And not just your blood brothers, but brothers and sisters in the Lord. And this is most visibly displayed in hospitality. And like the end of this passage says, there's much more to say, but it's best to say it face to face. And as you leave here, I just ask you, greet someone by name. Get to know their name. Greet them by name, just like John tells Gaius. Get to know people, be hospitable, and greet them by name.